documents with the Canadian pirates were boarding in Lutica.
Yeah, and but it wasn't until after the war that I found out that they'd taken all the rum from the chiefs and petty officers' mess in the Swift and kept getting drunk, and Stanley and others couldn't enlighten me. Maybe they knew, maybe they didn't. I think Dick got some very nice souvenirs like service binoculars and sextants and that sort of thing, which he probably still has. Then we went over another patrol. We went over to Omaha Beach, and the sea, apparently for miles, was covered with dead Americans bobbing around like apples, all bottoms up. Their life belts were faulty, I think, and they floated with their bums up and their faces in the water, and it was an extraordinary sight to see all these dead Yanks. The other thing was that we had a landing craft that shortly after the invasion started, when the landing craft were going in, this landing craft by us hit an obstruction and blew up, and so they hauled us along, got alongside us. No, maybe another landing craft took people off that had been wounded, came alongside us and put them on board, and it was like handing up chunks of meat, these poor guys. So we had four sailors, and they took rather a long time to die too, so we sewed them up. I had them sewn up with the last stitch, sewn up in hammocks with the last stitch between the base of the nose, you know, through this piece here, and shot a 4.7 shell between their legs and consigned them to the deep. Another thing, we went back to England, and I was able to just ask Neil to go right into Portsmouth Dockyard in the motor cutter and ask if he could get a whaler, and he came back with towing a whaler, no problem at all. I didn't even have to go to the Swift to get it. And we took the Canadian General Staff over to England.
Crerar.
Yeah.
I've seen that picture of Debbie and Crerar on the bridge.
Yeah. The when we got back, did we do more bombardment? But in any case, once, one day, we were back by where the Swift was, and this time just the top mast of the Swift is sticking out of the water with the radar, the 293, I think it was. So I'm looking at that, and I think, well, I would like to get the perspex off that, because the people kept falling through the notice boards, and I was afraid in the rough seas, you see. And I kept thinking, I'm going to get someone who's hurt or cuts himself very badly, so if I get the perspex, the plexiglass, whatever, from the 293, I'll be able to put down the nose board. So I said to the captain, is it all right if I go over to the Swift's mast and take the 293? Oh, fine, Yogi, says the captain. So I go over with a killick. I can't remember his name. So we secure the motor cutter to the bottom of the mast, and he and I are up the mast, busy trying to get the perspex off, and we're also trying to take the 293 out, because so it won't fall into the hands of the Germans. So while we're there, much to, I don't know how the leading seaman felt, certainly to my astonishment and dismay, shells start landing around us, you know, bam! You hear the thing, you know. I don't know if this happened to you, but you hear, you have the explosion, then you hear it coming, and then you've got the pitter-patter of little pieces coming.
Well, they were shore batteries from Le Havre.
Yeah. And so I said to the leading seaman, I think we're being used as a ranging mark for the ship or something. He said, yes. Chop, chop, chop. Bam! Another one going on. I'm saying, how are you managing up there? Oh, fine, sir. I'll have her down in the... Bam! And these are right alongside. I think this guy is crazy, or he's got nerves of steel, or I'm a... whatever I am. Coward, perhaps. Yellow-bellied hard. I'm proud to say, bam, they're still going off. I thought, so I'm looking around, how are you coming? And he talked, it won't be too long. You know, bam, another one coming down.
Were you getting wet from the shell splashes?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, and smoke, you know, they make a lot of smell, they stink. And so then I look back at Algonquin. My heavens, that yellow belly
appears
as
buggered off.
Buggering off in his ship, taking our ship. Well, I say, I think you better try and hurry. He said, I'm doing the best I can. He said, do you want the plexiglass, don't you? I said, oh, yes, certainly. At the cost of my life.
You're not going to get those notice boards in shape.
So finally, he said, oh, there we are. And he lifts it down, and we put it in the boat, and then we get in the boat. Well, this time, now the boat is the target for the battery, and as we're chugging along, we've got shells landing beside us. The ship is getting further and further in the distance. And,
there you are chasing Debbie.
There we are chasing Debbie, but happily we've eventually, after what seemed maybe about 2 or 5 years, 5 years, 10 years, a very long time, we finally caught the ship.
So Algonquin ended the war with first-rate notice boards.
It did indeed, and the plexiglass worked fine. Now, the only other thing, last night when I was thinking about Algonquin days, and of course, you know mostly what happened about the visits to Russia. Oh, the Soviet Union, you know, you remember Johnny Lloyd, our engineer officer?
Oh, yeah.
From Belleville the Beautiful. And he was a hard rock miner, and boy, he used to declare, if he wanted to get drunk, he would say, it is officially Saturday night. Mm. And then he would get roaring drunk. But one night we were in the Red Officers Club. The captain and I went up there after dinner, you know. We thought we would just go up for a drink and possible socialization. When we got up there, there's Johnny Lloyd with his assistant engineer. I can't remember his name. And Lloyd is obviously very drunk. And do you remember the large statue of Stalin at the head of the stairs? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Oh, my God, he's not going to attack that.
Well, oh, yes, he did, but later. But the first thing, they tried that business of pulling the tablecloth off.
Yeah.
And with the dishes remaining in place,
yes.
You know, if you...
You go through a lot of dishes that way.
Yeah, if you do it quickly enough, the dishes will remain on the table.
Yeah.
Well, they did that, but the dishes didn't remain on the table. They came off of the tablecloth, so there was a hell of a crashing and everything. And Lloyd was ably assisted in his drunken revelries by his senior engineer, I guess we dignified this chap. With them. Don't misunderstand me. I have great respect for Lloyd and this other guy, but this was just one of those awful things. In the meantime, all the Russian officers who are the epitome of respectability and so on, as we don't always recollect them in that manner, but they are with their ladies looking up to see what this barbarian from Canada is doing. You know, you can see them craning up from their tables where they're sitting eating black bread and borscht or whatever. And by this time, the senior engineer has said, well, what we'll do is we'll pull the tablecloth from under Lloyd. So he's put the tablecloth on top of Lloyd. So Lloyd is sitting there straight up like this with the tablecloth over his head, you know. He
sitting on the table?
No. Just in a chair. They've moved the table over by this time. So then the senior engineer says, we must have some dishes. So he's piling dishes on top of Lloyd's head. And of course they wouldn't stay there. And then the idea, of course, he was going to yank the tablecloth off Lloyd and the dishes would stay on his head, you see. But they didn't. So the captain, I'm not exactly sure of the sequence of events, but I think the captain said, tell him he'd better go back to the ship, Yug, or something like that. Anyway, it was conveyed to Johnny that he should go back to the ship. Oh, I'm not doing anything, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll go if that's the way you feel, you know. So he gets up, and he notices Stalin is standing there with his pipe, like this.
I remember that.
Were you there when he did that?
No, but I remember that statue. Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, he said, that pipe needs lighting. So he's scratching matches all over the statue of Stalin and holding them over this pipe. And by this time, the captain is smiling at him and saying, get back to the ship.
Yes. The smiling Lloyd. Tiger.
Yeah. Get back to the ship, Lloyd. So Lloyd couldn't light the pipe, obviously. So he said, oh, you know, F it. And throws the matches away. And starts down the stairs. Well, of course, he fell and bump, 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 down he goes. Then he went down the outside stairs and went bump, bump, bump down those. You know, the front. The friend at the officers' club. The only other, well, I suppose there are many other things, but this is a very strange thing, and this is what I was thinking about last night, and I couldn't remember the name of the... We had, for a long time, 13 officers sitting down in our wardroom. So people got rather nervous about this due to the circumstances that we were in at the time. Well, they thought, well, we must have a 14th officer. So we invented one. Did I ever tell you this?
Never.
And his name was generally agreed, Lieutenant Murgatroyd, and this is what I couldn't remember last night. And so a place would be set for Murgatroyd, and the stewards went along, you know, they were just as nervous as we were about the there being 13 officers at the table. So they say, well, Murgatroyd's finished his soup now, you know, and take away Murgatroyd's soup, so I said, sir, take away his soup and bring him his joint, and so on. This went on for some time. Anyway, the time came, and we were due to go back to Canada, and the war was just about to end. And I guess you were still doing one more run. And
yeah, those last convoys weren't attacked at all.
No. So anyway...
As a matter of fact, I want to stick it in here. They weren't carrying war materials at all either. They were carrying plowshares and machinery for Russia to recover from the war. And we felt a bit surly about risking our lives. We didn't mind risking our lives to help Russia win the war, but we felt a bit surly about risking our lives for a general cargo of agricultural equipment.
Yes. Well, anyway...
You ride back before
we went. We went to Scapa, and then, as usual, and then when we were, then we went down to the tide bank and fueled up, and then we took off for Canada, straight across, which I'll mention in a moment. But when we were in the tide bank, I think it was, Niobe sent some people to join the ship for passage to Canada. And maybe this was in Scapa, and, you know, maybe I'm dreaming this, but I'm quite sure it happened. An officer came and said, I'm taking passage back to Canada in the Algonquin. I said, fine. I said, this was about 7 o'clock in the morning, and the drifter had come along. And I said, what is your name, please, so that I can introduce you? I said, there won't be many people in the world. He said, Murgatroyd. I said, nobody will believe you. And he sort of looked at me in the strangest way. And I went into the wardroom and I said, this is Lieutenant Murgatroyd. But I can't be dreaming this. I think it really happened. But I'll tell you another strange thing. My brother was in the Navy, you know, but in the lower deck. He was a gunnery rating. And... my father was in the Army, and he was the transportation officer for Newfoundland. Well, the Algonquin went across the Atlantic. We sailed from the Clyde and straight over to Newfoundland. And this was, what, April? just before the war ended, yeah. Whatever. And so we're going to St. John's through the gate, zip, 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 and coming up to our jetty, there's only one person there, and some army guy. And so Debbie's looking around for who's going to take our lines and so on. And the ship is inching in, and Debbie was a splendid ship hander, you know. And I said, "My goddess, it's Dad." So there's my father, and you know, he's one of these people who doesn't. Well, he was a very fine guy, but you know, to heave him heaving lines, he wouldn't know what to do with them. This time, here you are! Oh, heaving lines are zipping over at my poor old father. He's catching, he took our bow line, and then by this time, he just got the bow line pulled in. But there he is in his captain's uniform, and hauling. Oh, he sings, "Hello, Latham," he's saying to me.
The captain said, "Do you know the birthing party?" "Yes, he's my dad."
And then I said, "That's my father." He said, "It can't be." I said, "It is indeed." So, anyway, my father and I had a nice visit, and he'd seen my brother a few weeks before. Then we went to Halifax. Now, maybe, do you want one more tale?
Yeah.
We got to Halifax, and we were supposed to be paying off, well, not paying off, going into refit to be converted for the Pacific campaign. And I think all our sailors pretty well had volunteered for the Pacific anyway. But they wanted leave. They hadn't had leave for, what, over a year and 2 years, really. And so Admiral Murray was going to inspect the ship's company. This is before the Halifax riots and so on. The war had not quite ended. So he was supposed to be inspecting us 2 days after we arrived, and then we were going to de-store and de-ammunition and go into dry dock and all that sort of thing, and for a refit for the Pacific. Well, 2 days, and nobody's gone on leave. The Admiral can't inspect you until next Friday or something like that. Well, you know, people are beginning to. In the meantime, there's this standing shore patrol of policemen dressed like sailors, yeah. And they're busy beating up all my guys. And, you know, and I never had any trouble with them at all for
2 years.
That's right. And so eventually on Friday, he comes and he looks over the ship's company and doesn't look happy about anything. So then he speaks to the ship company. He said, "I'm glad to see that there's only one man wearing a suit made of diagonal serge." And diagonal serge, you recollect, was taboo for reasons which I don't know. And then he went on to say that if anybody started bragging about all the exploits of the ship, would be put in detention or beat up or whatever, and there wasn't to be any nonsense of swaggering around Halifax and fighting with the shore patrols and so on, or they really would be in trouble, and that the people who hadn't had the opportunity to be in Europe or European waters had no reason to feel superior to people, or the people
the other way around,
the other way around, and so on in that strain. And he didn't want to hear any nonsense out of our ship, and that was that. And he stomped off. And then the ship company went on leave.
Unsuitable speech. What was the matter with the man?
I don't know, but that's the first and last time I saw him. Then afterwards, well, of course,
that's completely inappropriate.
Totally inappropriate. It didn't surprise me one bit when the riots took place. But I really would like that recorded or known to posterity. That was awful.
Well, this could be verified by Debbie if need be.
Yeah.
You're the two that we know were there. Well.
So that's. Then I went off to.
I'd rather have ended on the note of your father receiving your lines. That was a nice way to end the tape, and it's a rather sad note upon which to end the tape.
Yeah.
But you really did have an absolutely remarkable war, and Dr. Douglas will be extremely grateful for having your narrative of it. As for Alma and me, we've been friends of yours for 45 years. We've enjoyed. Alma has been howling at this last part of the tape. So I think Debbie will, or Debbie, I think Yogi will say farewell on this note.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let the tape show we're shaking hands.